SaaS Open Mic is brought to you by ChartMogul. SaaS startups like Typeform, Pipedrive, and Instapage use ChartMogul to centralize and analyze their subscription billing and customer data. Go to chartmogul.com and sign up for a free trial today. And if you're just starting out, ChartMogul is free for businesses with less than $10,000 in monthly recurring revenue. That's chartmogul.com for a free trial. One of the biggest barriers to SaaS businesses going truly global from day one is localization. That is, the process of adapting your product to meet the language and cultural requirements of a specific target market. Vasco Pedro is founder and CEO of Unbabel, a company helping businesses go global from day one through both AI and human-powered translation as a service. My discussion here with Vasco is a must-listen for anyone approaching new markets or thinking about localization of their product. There are a ton of hidden challenges here and common misconceptions that completely change the game for startups. Did you know, for example, that English is actually a shrinking language online? The need to localize software is higher than ever. And it was great to hear how Vasco's team are tackling this with a hybrid AI and human-based approach. So I'll leave you now with Vasco Pedro, founder and CEO of Unbabel. So Vasco, thank you so much for joining me here on the show. It's really great to be talking to you.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Before we get into what you're doing at Unbabel, I noticed that your background is actually really strongly tied to research in linguistics and natural language. I don't know if those are the right terms exactly, but could you just describe your education and how that's like really seems to be really strongly tied to what you're doing today at Unbabel?
Yeah, happy to. You're right. It is very strongly tied. I guess ever since I can remember, I've been fascinated by human cognition. And that's actually the path that led me to computer science as a way to create and explore different aspects of human cognition. And my undergrad was on, I did a major in artificial intelligence and a minor in computational linguistics. And then after that, I went to Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh and did a master's in natural language processing and a PhD also in natural language processing in the School of Computer Science. So I've been one way or another, really involved in this field for most of my life. The stuff that fascinates me within language ends up being correlated with semantics, kind of the meaning behind the text, which I think eventually is the key to unlocking a lot of the stuff in language. But currently in Babel, is more focused obviously on, for now, translation, but overall our mission is much bigger than that. And it ties in very nicely with a lot of the stuff I've been doing before.
Yeah. Could you just describe quickly what Unbabel is for those people that maybe are not familiar?
So Unbabel's mission is to build universal understanding. And the way that we think about this is that we live in a global economy, a global world, and it's ever more important to be able to communicate and interact in a global economy. Right? And so to do that, you need to be able to do it in multiple languages. And this is a big problem because the world is diverging when it comes to languages. So if you look at the amount of content online, it used to be about 80% English, about 1998. And now English represents about 20% of online content, and it's expected to bottom out at about 10%. And what you're seeing is, for all intents and purposes, you have a Chinese internet and a Russian internet and, you know, a Brazilian internet. And people consume news in a much more local way, and they interact with content through social networks in the language that they happen to be, you know, more fluent. And so this is a problem that's becoming bigger. And in our mind, the thing that is that doesn't make a lot of sense is, you know, that we see this thing existing in the near future that we're calling the world's translation layer. And it's going to be something that is going to be embedded into every app, every interface, every business process. It's seamless, customizable, and adaptable, and it's going to deal with every language and content type. And that's what we're building, the world's translation layer. And we think that that will enable an entire new generation of businesses that are global from day one, you know, that don't constrain themselves to a specific market, but think from global perspective very early on.
That's a pretty compelling mission for me. That, and I guess this will be surprising for other people as well, just the fact that English as a language is kind of dwindling online in terms of its presence in relation to, you know, Chinese and Russian and other languages. That's really surprising to me. But it, when you think about it, it does make sense as the rest of the world kind of comes online. This is actually a growing problem rather than a shrinking one.
Exactly. I mean, you and I live in a world where most people around us are able to speak English. And so we have survivor bias, but only 25% of the world actually speaks English, even as a second language. And if you look at the people there, so we're now about 3.5 billion people online. We're expected to hit, 4.5-5 billion the next 3-4 years. And the most of the people that are coming online right now are coming from developing countries. You know, the next 400 million people in India to go online, they won't speak English. And less and less they will need to. That's the thing that is a little counterintuitive. On one hand, English is serving itself as the business language. But on the other hand, it's so easy to create content in your own language that you don't need to go outside of your language to find what you're looking for. You know, like you consume it through social networks. You tend to post in your own language. Services, the more services exist in your language, the less you need to go outside. And we see that very much in Europe. It's a good example. Europe is a great example if you think of Europe as a microcosm of the world, right? I mean, from a regulatory perspective, it should be straightforward. It should be, you know, the selling of goods and moving goods and across Europe is supposedly solved. And yet, if you look at stats, only 12% of online retailers actually sell to neighboring countries, and only 15% of people actually buy from neighboring countries. And so it shows that the language is still a big barrier. I mean, not all of this is language, but it has a big impact here. And this is in Europe, which is like, you know, first world people in general, that's the expectation. People speak English. And if you then divide between actually being able to speak English and having a real conversation versus being functional, like being able to survive in English, but not really having conversation, then you get into a much different picture. I'm seeing right now something that is actually a little bit scary for me, which is, for example, in Portugal, when I was growing up, all the TV was subtitled, but you'd hear the original language. And actually, this would actually teach you a lot about languages because you'd hear the original, you have the subtitle right there, so you start associating the sounds and the meanings. But nowadays, because it's easier to create content in your own language, kids, you know, very young kids now, everything they see on TV is in Portuguese for the most part. And so I'm wondering how that's going to impact their ability to really connect to English as a, you know, from a phonetic perspective, and if it won't create much more of an accent. So this is one example. The other, for example, if you look at Japan, it's another good example. Japan in the 80s was incredibly common to, it was considered very important to go outside and have a, you know, like study 1 year abroad with the U.S. And now if you look at the amount of students from Japan that go to the U.S. for post-graduation, for anything really, it declined tremendously. And the thesis there is that more and more people find everything they need in Japan and they don't feel the need to leave and to look outside.
And again, that's something that's really surprising and perhaps contrary to a lot of people's thinking around, you know, globalization and English as a global language. Obviously, Unbabel is a SaaS solution for businesses to help them communicate with other markets and other languages. Could you describe how that actually works in a practical sense?
So what we do that is different, that enables us to do what we do, is we combine humans with artificial intelligence. So if you look at current solutions in the market, you know, machine-only solutions, things like Google Translate, they're great from the consumer perspective to get a gist, to kind of understand roughly what things are talking about, but they're not ready for the enterprise. They don't provide the quality, the reliable customer experience. And so they're not suitable for a business to interact with their customers. And then if you look at human-only solutions, so the typical translation services that exist until now, they're really expensive and not scalable. And what we do is we combine both. So we have our own neural machine translation. So it's customer-adapted neural machine translation. We combine it with a crowd of 55,000 people currently, but we're really aiming for the 2 billion people in the world that speak more than one language and have a smartphone. And by combining these two, what you have from a very high level perspective is everything that goes through the machine gets improved by humans, and everything that gets improved by humans then improves the machine and creates this positive feedback loop. Now, then this is delivered through an API into the integrations and applications that companies use already. So to give you a specific use case, or maybe a couple of them. So one is customer service. So let's say you want to do international customer service, but right now you need to hire a team of people that speaks like the language you want to support. Right? And at some point, this means you're going to have to manage teams all across the globe, which is complicated and very expensive. So alternatively, you can, if you use Salesforce or Zendesk or Freshworks, they're called Freshworks now, you just add our app. We have native apps for those solutions. And every one of your agents can provide customer service in 28 languages seamlessly in 5 minutes. And the way it works is, let's say you get an email coming in Chinese. By the time it gets to your agent, it's in English. They reply in English. The other person gets it in Chinese. So we're kind of a layer in between that makes sure the communications happen. And the whole experience is very magical, very seamless. So this is one potential use case.
I'm just really intrigued. Like, how do you get down to that kind of latency when you have humans involved in the process?
So our latency for email translation is between 5 and 20 minutes. And what we see is that's adequate for like the adding that latency to emails on customer service is not an issue. The important bit is that it doesn't create friction, meaning when the agent is replying to an email and sends, as far as they're concerned, that is taken care of, right? So they don't have to come back, get a translation and send it. They just send the email in English, and then we behind the scenes then post the reply in, let's say it's Chinese, they reply in Chinese later, but it's they're done with that ticket, right? And so the lag doesn't affect because it doesn't affect the workflow and communication.
I noticed a lot of the kind of language on the Unbabel homepage and in your marketing is really kind of pushing this notion of going global from day one. And I think actually quite often for a lot of startups, it's not even a consideration in the early days. There is this sense of, you know, attacking or, you know, conquering the US market first and then thinking about other markets, especially non-English markets later on. Could you tell me, like, why do you think it's important to target like a global market from day one?
So I think the reason why companies don't do it nowadays is exactly because there's a big language barrier. I mean, it's not like you don't want to sell your product. I mean, if you think about digital products, take something like Slack. We were never contacted by somebody at Slack trying to sell us Slack. I mean, it was something that we found and decided to use. Slack is not done. It's not really, you know, done in Portugal, obviously, than in the US. And I would bet it's the same thing for a lot of products, where nowadays for digital products, especially, you don't care where they're made, right? I mean, you buy products that are good. I think companies focus on specific markets because it's really hard to deal with languages. I mean, it's really hard to then go into a different market and, you know, talking a different way, speaking to people that, you know, you have to have all the resources. You have to have your website translated. You have to have your newsletter, your content, your customer service. And this means that it's a lot of friction on top of what you're doing. And so you say, look, I got to focus on something. This is not core right now. But if it wasn't friction, and, you know, the definition of product market fit means that, you know, to get product market fit, you can change your product or change the market, right? If you increase the market substantially, meaning if your market's the whole world, how many more products would find product market fit? How many more products would be amazing for countries in Asia but don't work really well in the US in the beginning and they never get a chance because people never get to test them out in different markets? A good example is WhatsApp, right? I mean, if WhatsApp had just focused on the US market, then it would have failed, right? Because it actually grew fundamentally through international means. And so I think the easier it is for a company to be able to really think globally, the easier it is for a company to be successful. Because in the end, you know, like there's people with needs all over the world and they have slightly different way of interacting with products. There are different conditions in each market, but if you're able to test it out in more markets, it might be able to find where it really fits. And I think that's a big advantage. I mean, the fundamental gist is if you could have a market of 3.5 billion people, why would you just focus on a market of, you know, 300 million?
Many of the founders I talk to spend hours logging into different applications or poring over Excel sheets to understand the health of their SaaS business and get to the root of issues like churn. ChartMogul connects with your subscription billing provider, automatically calculates your key metrics and turns them into investor-ready reports. As a result, founders can spend less time on reporting and more time focusing on growth. Start your free trial today at chartmogul.com.
As a SaaS company, let's say I'm starting a business today, and my aim is to go global from day one. What should I think about that's really key in actually executing on that strategy in a successful way? Like, as a content person, that kind of terrifies me, because content, we have a lot of content at Chartmogul, and that's all in English and in different kind of mediums and formats. But it seems that there's a lot outside of that as well. Like, are there any tips or advice that you'd have for companies wanting to do that?
It's totally understandable that it's a little bit overwhelming, because the processes that would enable your content to be available in multiple languages are onerous right now. I mean, it means you have to think about how do I turn them into multiple languages? How do I manage each content as I do updates? How do I distribute it in different channels? And then I have one more dimension on those channels, which is channels by language. It just overcomplicates things. I think the key is, can we find solutions in which, from your side, is as much complexity to do one language than it is to 28, and then that really facilitates things. In the current setting, of course, if you're doing, let's take a type of content, right? So if you're doing video, more and more video is important for marketing content. But one of the challenges is that most people nowadays consume video on their phones, typically from social networks, without sound. 85% of videos on Facebook they're played without sound, right? So if you don't have subtitles, then no one's going to watch your video. They're going to scroll. Now, if you already went to the trouble of creating the content, the video, and if you're doing subtitles, then why not do it in a bunch of languages and then enable, like, that's a seamless expansion to markets where you're enabling other people to interact with your content. If, up to a few months ago, there wasn't really a good way of doing that. It's cumbersome. You had different providers of transcription and translation, different price points. It was a mess. So we've launched recently a video API where you say, here's a video. I need subtitles in, seven languages. And we do one-shot subtitling and subtitling to multiple languages. We do the transcription, translation, et cetera, in a super fast turnaround time. Now, this enables you as a marketeer of just getting to the habit of, like, everything I produce, if it fits into my workflow and I don't have to do extra work for it, and if I can measure the benefits that I get from it, then it's a no-brainer to do. But we need to get to the point where, where we're not asking you to do more things or things in a more complex way because then if you have to do things in a more complex way, then you're measuring the return on investment. Like, well, there's going to be a huge investment for this. Will I really get a return from bundling SG people, right? But then there's like hundreds of millions of people there, and you kind of know in the back of your mind, if I should have launched this in Brazil, there might be a great opportunity. But right now, like, I just can't handle it. I think one of the things that most companies will start with is taking their website or app and making sure that it's available in multiple languages. And that's still easier than it used to be. It's still not incredibly easy. It's a problem that still needs to be solved. But I've said that typically is step one. The earlier you do that, the better, because it will enable you to discover where are people responding better to your message. And then after that, you'll start getting pull from markets, from different markets, right? And if you see that it makes sense, then you're going to be translating your blog posts, your newsletters. You're going to have your videos subtitled. You'll have your customer service, and the market will pull that a little bit out of you. But you need to be ready for that, right? And if you don't have a good solution, that is seamless, then the friction will just be too much, and you won't feel like you're getting return on it. But once the friction is low enough and the cost is low enough, then it's kind of a no-brainer, right? Because you already created the content. Imagine, like, you already created a bunch of blog posts. Why wouldn't you want to have them in multiple languages if you could and if it was easy, right? The only reason is really if it creates a lot of friction, or if your product is fundamentally not international, which sometimes can happen, of course. If you're selling an insurance, like a broker for the U.S. market, it's a very different product itself than if you sell, like, the kinds of insurance you can sell in other countries, right? Or a mortgage kind of product.
Yeah, that's true. I totally agree that when the friction goes away, like, there really is no reason to not do it anymore. That's definitely, like, the barrier to that. Finally, like, I would love to just talk a little bit about the technology behind this. Things like products like Google Translate seem to me to have been reasonably, like, mediocre for a long time. What changes are going on right now to make translation technology like move towards that goal of being seamless? And how far away from that are we still?
So there's a lot of excitement in the translation space right now, a lot of it driven by the same advances that enable Google and others to come up with much better models. The main advances, you know, everything around neural, so neural machine translation, deep learning, and finally it's kind of come to machine translation. Google launched their neural models a few months ago, 6-7 months ago, and what you see is it's a big increase, right? So it doubled the quality that it had before. Also, neural models work very differently than the phrase-based models that we had before, and so the text comes out sounding more natural, which is great. Now, the problem is that even though it's still doubled the quality, it's still not really the quality that you'd need to be able to send it to your customers. And sometimes something that is a little more insidious is that the amplitude of quality is incredibly high. So you might have, you know, an entire email that is fine, and then you have another email that is just it's translating basically to the opposite of what you're trying to say, right? Which could be really, you know, really dangerous. And so what we see is you have state-of-the-art models like Google Translate, which are, I would say, about 2/3 of the way there. And then you have a model like the one in Babel, which is neural, but it's customer adaptive. So it takes a lot of the customer specific data to customize it for that customer domain. And so the accuracy goes up quite significantly. I would say you get like, so we use a scale that's called MQM that goes from 1 to 100 on quality. And to give you a sense, Google Translate, the phrase-based model, so the previous one, have been around the 30s. The current one, the neural model, is about 60s, so it's a big step up. And then our model is about 80s, like lower 80s, because of the customer adaptation. And then on top of that, we have the human component, right? And that's really what takes it to like mid-90s, which is the professional quality that our customers need and that is adequate for your business. But we can do that in a very efficient way.
Yeah, I'm assuming that at some point the human element for you guys will go away when the tech is good enough. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, you'd think so, right? But we're not seeing that in the near future, at least. We're seeing, of course, there's a like data, human generated data increases the accuracy of the AI. But one, I think there is fundamental parts of the AI itself that we haven't quite understood. Like we don't understand how our brain really works. We have like neural models are slightly inspired in our brain, but not completely. And so, for example, they need way more data than we do as humans to learn something, transfer learning. So meaning you learn a task in one domain and you want to use it in another domain. Hasn't been solved at all. So there's a lot of severe limitations there that we need a few breakthroughs, like fundamental breakthroughs to be able to get it to the level that we would need to not have humans. So what we're seeing is there's an increase, but then it plateaus, right? And then you have this long tail problem. The other, as we move forward, what I see is for some use cases, which are a little bit easier. So things like domain specific chat, right? Which is simple structure. That's the other problem is that then you train the machine translation engine with, let's say news text, it will do well on news text, but if you then feed it chat, it will do really badly, right? And if you feed it subtitles, it completely destroys it. It does a really poor job. So you need to also have the data on a per domain and type of text available to then train the engine, and then you need data across multiple language pairs. And so there's still a lot of stuff that needs to happen both from the algorithm and the data. What I do see is maybe in some use cases where you got enough accuracy, humans will go from a role of being, let's say, responsible for delivering the quality in production to being more like data generation engines, right? Where you have a new customer and the first month humans are like, you know, really working away generating the data that you need, and then they get phased out. But in one way or another, I see humans involved in this process for the foreseeable future. And not disappear completely.
That's interesting. Yeah. Vasco, I don't want to take too much more of your time. I know we're a bit time limited, but perhaps just finally, could you outline like what 2018 and beyond holds for Unbabel? Like, what are you guys working on? What are you excited about?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, like, 2017 was already a great year. We're going to end the year having grown more than 1,000%. We went from 25 people to 75 people. We reduced, our technology has had like this incredible impact in our quality, cost per word. It's been really amazing. 2018, is setting up to be even better. So our expectation is to double our team at least this next year. There's going to be a lot of emphasis on growing the San Francisco office. We're going to launch a New York office. We're going to increase our London office. And we're probably going to start really thinking about opening an office in Asia. Technology-wise, we're continuing to recruit world-class talent in artificial intelligence. We have now 8 PhDs on the team. That's going to increase. There's a lot of very interesting problems that they're working on. We're moving more and more into transcription, so with the video case, and there's a lot of disruption yet to happen there. And we're looking at some pretty far-fetched things now. I mean, for example, we believe that in the future, actually the brain-to-computer interface is going to be incredibly powerful to enable communication. And so we're starting to look at brain-to-brain translation, for example. I mean, you know, this is obviously not going to happen next year. It's going to start next year. It's more of a long-term project, but it's areas we're already starting to actively look into. And it's a really amazing time, you know, because I think deep learning still has a lot of value to create. There's the ratio of amount of people working in deep learning and the computational power is powering interesting breakthroughs. And we're, you know, looking forward to seeing that. We publish papers, we are in conference, so we're always up to date on what's happening. And we contribute actively to some of the deep learning frameworks. And so we're expecting really big things there. I think next year is going to be a great year for translation and for AI in general and for Unbabel.
Yeah, that's super exciting stuff. And it's really great to speak to somebody who's so deep into all of this, which I think is such a relevant topic at the moment and hopefully something that other businesses can learn from as well when it comes to expanding globally. So thanks, Vasco. It's been great to talk to you, and I wish you a successful 2018 and beyond.
Thank you, Ed. It's been a pleasure.